This is Hashtag No Limits, and I am your host, Shelly Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better or more beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. Quick little science lesson for those who don't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, and just when it thinks its world is over, it reforms into a butterfly. But that's not enough. It still has to struggle in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly when it gets out of the cocoon. None of that can be easy, I imagine, but neither is busting through limits that society places upon us. And today, my guest is Dr. Larry Waldman, and he is a top Phoenix psychologist, and he is going to share with us some different ways of thinking about parenting, of how we approach life in general. And so before we bring him on, though, I do have to remind you, if you want to never miss an episode, which you don't want to miss an episode, go ahead and hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. If you're watching us live today, be sure to give us a hashtag live and where you're watching from. And if you're watching in the replay, give us a hashtag replay and where you're watching from. All right. So without further ado, let me bring Dr. Waldman on. Thank you for joining me today, Dr. Waldman. How are you doing?
Doing great.
Good.
When I get that question, I often say, well, ask my wife because she knows.
That's true. That's a psychologist answer, I think, too, because you know that, you know, how we think about ourselves may not be how other people think about us as well. So I gave a tiny little bit of intro information about you, but give us the rest of the story. Who is Dr. Larry and do you go by Dr. Larry, Dr. Waldman, or?
Larry here is fine. That's okay. I'm semi-retired now. My active practice is over. I still teach, write, speak, coach, things like that, and do podcasts and so on. But I'm not seeing patients actively anymore. I was a clinical forensic psychologist for about 45 years in Phoenix, Arizona. The forensic piece came the last 20 years or so of my practice, doing family law, personal injury, things of that nature, and so on. I saw lots of folks over that time. I worked with kids, families, couples, parents, and of course, did a fair amount of court work. Lately, I am now doing a lot of yoga. I became yoga certified in my late 70s, and now I teach and so on. So I'm enjoying that that as well. I've written a number of books on various topics. On parenting, marriage, a private practice, and so on. Quickly, my first book was Who's Raising Whom? That's still my most popular one. The second one was Coping with Your Adolescent. Third was How Come I Love Him But Can't Live with Him? The fourth was Too Busy Earning a Living to Make Your Fortune. The fifth one was The Graduate Course You Never Had. Now that's the second edition on practice development. Another popular one I did that not too long ago during COVID, actually, was Love Your Child More Than You Hate Your Ex, what every divorced parent needs to know. And the one that just came out a couple of months ago is entitled Silver Sex, Insights into Senior Sexuality. So kind of covers the boardwalk, if you will.
Yes, you do. You covered all the ages.
Well, you know, as I grew, both I guess, what, philosophically and experientially, and of course, you know, chronologically, then so did my books as well.
That's awesome. Congratulations. I am a single author. I don't know that I have more than one book in me, but that's amazing to have as many books on similar but very different topics. You know, there's definitely the relationship thread and how we all communicate with one another in those books, but very vastly different as far as practical application. So I want to start with that your first book, Who is Raising Whom? Tell us about that, because I think that one of all of them will lead the most into furthering our discussion.
Sure, be glad to. Well, it seems to me that one of the most important jobs that adults have is to raise a human being. And as important as that is, it still surprises me that most people go into that position, if you will, with little or no information.
Right.
They basically parent by the seat of their pants, if you will. And that's unfortunate, because there really is a fair amount of information out there that can guide parents. And that's why I wrote that book, because I wanted to help parents take on this most important job of raising, you know, a responsible, resilient, caring adult, if you will, ultimately. That's our goal. I mean, that's what guided me as a parent as I worked with my two sons now. Of course, they're now, one's almost 50 and the other one is in his late 40s. But you know, the question always was, you know, is what I'm doing here, you know, leading me and them to becoming, you know, responsible, independent young men. And that I think is our objective. And the book, I believe, helps do that.
Yeah, I think in our society today, we have forgotten that. As a parent, our objective is to raise people who won't need us after a certain age. They will want to be around us, but they won't need us. And I think we have a lot of parents, and I'll be honest, that was the difficult part for me, was when our daughter, and we were only blessed with one child, so when our daughter was at the age where we had done our job well and she was ready to leave, that, you know, I was like, but I don't want her to go. But she needed to go. She needed to become her own person and have her own beliefs and have her own experiences and make her own mistakes and have our own successes. But I think so many parents in today's world are just focused on getting through today that they're not able to think about their overall goal of being a parent. And for my kind of passionate, the group that I'm the most passionate about, I think that's even more real when you are raising someone who has a disability or who has a need for special education, or who has, you know, big, strong behaviors that, as you said, there's a lot of information out there, but a lot of parents don't know to access that information. So what would you say to the parents of someone who has a child, let's say with autism? How would you guide them?
Well, that's an interesting question. And I used to have parents say this to me all the time, particularly in the case where the parents had a child with certain exceptionalities, if you will. And that is, well, you know, Dr. Waldman, the theories that you prescribe, you know, sound good, but my child is different. My child has, you know, fill in the blank, a learning disability, attention deficit disorder, you know, Asperger's, etc., autism and so on. And my response to that was pretty much all the same. And I would say, I'm sorry, but frankly, you're wrong. In fact, because your child has some, you know, disabilities or exceptionalities, as the case may be, you need to do this more. Because if we don't parent these children appropriately, what you're going to end up with is a child with a disability who's also badly behaved. So now we have two problems, you see. Mm-hmm. And what's important here is, as I said at the outset, you know, regardless of what the problem may be, you know, our objective as a parent is to help this child, you know, become as independent and responsible as possible, as the case may be. And that means, you know, they need to learn how to, you know, get along with people and, you know, take turns and share and et cetera, and manage their emotions and so on. Because, you know, when teenagers or adults and so on throw temper tantrums, for example, it doesn't go very well. Bosses don't like that kind of thing and so on. So they need to learn how to live in the world and so on. And overprotecting them or indulging them and so on is, frankly, not doing them a favor. Not at all. These kids need to learn that, you know, basically, you know, it pays off to be good, pays off to be responsible. I used to say all the time, you know, my kids manipulated me all the time. They behaved well and they got my attention and recognition. And that's how we operated, if you will. Unfortunately, what happens in many homes, particularly in homes with children who might have some kind of problems or disabilities and so forth, is a lot of the parental attention that they receive follows misbehavior. And right. So what the kid learns, you know, is that he or she can gain some recognition and control, which every child desires, but unfortunately, by behaving poorly. And while that may work at home during their childhood, it's not going to play very well in the larger world outside the home.
Yeah. I agree with a lot of that. As a special education teacher, I was able to teach, I thought, every one of my students. And I actually, in my teaching career, I worked with someone who was eligible for special education under every eligibility. So knowing that it didn't matter what the eligibility was for special education, manners can be taught and they can be exhibited when the child's needs are being met in positive ways. And exactly what you said, I think so often, because parents feel like they are just trying to get through this moment or get through this day, and they haven't learned, they haven't found anybody, or they didn't even know they could look out and find people who could help them with behavioral strategies, with understanding behaviors. I actually do a training called Hashtag No Limits, Shattering Limiting Beliefs, but it used to be called Understanding Behaviors, Lessons for a Lifetime. And I would just kind of, you know, I'm not a psychologist, but in my experiences in the education that I've had to be a special educator, I learned a lot about behaviors and what the underlying reason for so many behaviors is. And I truly believe that behavior is communication. So in that saying, is that something that you believe as well, that behavior is communication?
Well, yes. And behavior is learned. It's learned on the basis of, you know, what kind of consequences immediately follow that that behavior. Mm-hmm. So what parents many times fail to recognize is that, you know, and I've had many parents say, well, I can't believe he's behaving this way because, you know, when he does, I yell at him, you know, or and so on. But you see, right, from the child's perspective, how do they know that's inappropriate? You know, one thing we know about kids is that they want attention. They deserve attention. They need parental attention. You know, without it, they don't thrive. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they don't know what kind of attention they're supposed to get. I mean, how many books have they read about parenting?
Right.
And so, exactly. So, you know, what starts happening is basically the child is running the show. The parent is pretty much like on a string, and when the kid acts up, you know, the parent reacts. Well, as far as the kid's concerned, that's the way it's supposed to be. Meanwhile, right, you know, they are, you know, doing it because it gets them attention, it gets them control, and particularly with children with disabilities, because let's face it, they don't have quite the reach and grasp on the world as maybe other kids do. So if they can make up for it by manipulating their parents effectively, gosh darn it, they're going to do it. And right, so therefore, we have to be very, very careful about that. And basically, you know, and I try to make it simple for parents to understand, is to be systematic in how you provide your attention. Unfortunately, the data is clear. 90% of the time in most homes, children get most of their, or get their behavior, get their recognition following bad behavior. Only 10% of the time are kids getting recognized for the good behavior. You know, I call it the sleeping dog philosophy of parenting. You know, if things are okay, leave it alone. As soon as things start getting a little active or a little, you know, acting up, then you interact. No, reverse that. Catch them when they're good. You know, reward that good behavior and so on. Let them see the child can get their recognition and your time and control by behaving appropriately. You know, that's critical. Catch them when they're good. Teach them. It pays off to be good, and it pays off to be responsible.
Yeah. One of the things that you said was, well, you said it twice, that your kids manipulated you growing up as they were growing up because, you know, they behaved well and they got your attention for that. And then you just said that kids manipulate parents and in order, you know, because that they've learned, oh, when I act up, that's when I get attention. But you also said, and I want to bring this clearly to my audience, is that it may seem that kids are manipulating the situation. And when we think about manipulating, we think of that in a malicious, negative way. As you mentioned, the kids have learned when I act up, this is the, you know, I get that attention. I get that relationship. And so I want to make it clear that and I think this is what you're saying, and help me if this is not correct, but that when you're saying manipulating, you're not saying they're malicious intent manipulating. It's just they happen to be in control and they're inadvertently managing the situation without knowing why it happens that way.
Exactly. I didn't mean to suggest it's malicious. It's right. Literally built in. You know, as we were talking here, you just reminded me. Last week we did some traveling and so on, and we were in the airport, and I was seated there, and a couple seats away was a young mother with an infant, maybe the baby. Cute as a bug, by the way, but the baby was maybe 4 months, 5 months old or so. And the mother was holding it, and she calls over the father because she wants to, I don't know, go into her purse or something like that, and she hands the child to the father, okay? The baby starts to whine immediately, okay? Mm. Clearly preferring, apparently, mother over dad. Okay, so now they're standing there, just standing there, and the mother's looking kind of anxiously at the baby, and the baby's looking at the mother, and the baby can see that the mother is a little uncomfortable, you know, with the baby, with her crying and so forth, the little girl, and dad's standing there like, oh, I don't know, and so on. And before long, within 30 seconds, the father hands the baby back to the mother, and instantly she's quiet. Hmm. So here it is. This kid is maybe 3-4 months old, and guess what? Who's raising whom?
Yeah. Yep.
Now, if dad had simply walked away and got out of mother's sight, or if mom walked away and did something, you know, the child would have learned, well, I guess I have, you know, and see, those are some of the things that, you know, we have to teach our kid. You know, you can't always be in mom's arms. You know, that's a reality of life, little girl. Learn it.
Right.
Instead, what did they teach her?
Right. And we are so used to that because our babies aren't able to tell us, hey, I want mom, or, you know, and so they do cry. And so they have these, you know, big behaviors for an infant. And so we train ourselves exactly what you're saying. Oh, it's when there's a lot of noise coming from this little person that I'm supposed to pay attention to them. And then that's what we teach them. Oh, when I make a lot of noise, I get attention. And as the child continues to grow and they are able to use words, maybe, how many times have you been somewhere and you've heard mom, 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 mommy, mommy, and you hear it, you know, 50 times before and the voice gets louder and the pace gets faster. And, you know, eventually the mom does pay attention to the child, but the child is again learning. I've got to be big to get the attention that I want.
Well, you're exactly right. I talk about that as well. It's not only a matter of being big; it's a matter of being persistent. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, persistence is a good thing, but not the way most parents handle it. You know, it's just that kind of example. You know, I think the example I use in the book, you know, is a case where, you know, 5-year-old Timmy comes into the kitchen and mom is preparing dinner. It's maybe 5 o'clock. Dinner is at 5:30, 6, something like that. And Timmy says to mommy, mommy, I'm hungry. I want a cookie. So what does mommy say? Of course.
Dinner's going to be ready soon. No cookie.
Exactly. Yeah. And she's going to be nice. You know, Timmy, dinner's going to be ready soon. A cookie will spoil your appetite. You know, if you eat a nice dinner, we can have a cookie for dessert. Right? That's what mommy says. Very, you know, very appropriate, makes a lot of sense and so forth. Okay. And so what does Timmy do or say? Does he say, okay. Right. Does he walk away? Fine. Sure. Okay. No, we know what Timmy does. But mommy, I'm hungry now. I want a cookie. And so then what does mommy do? Well, mommy acts now like Timmy is deaf, right? Because she, again, repeats herself exactly as before, you know, like he didn't hear it the first time, right? So now what does this teach Timmy already? This is pretty interesting. Look at the power and control that I have. I'm only five, but I can get my mom now to stop doing what she's doing and get her to repeat herself and so forth, okay? So she repeats it again. Timmy, I told you, you know, dinner will be, you know, you're having a nice dinner. We're making chicken, one of your favorite dishes, boop, 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 you know, and then you can have your cooking. And of course, she's finally done. And then Timmy says, but I want a cookie. And then mom's getting a little frustrated and again, sort of says something and so forth. And this goes on again, another time or two. And finally, you know, Timmy now is about ready to launch. Okay. He's going to have his tantrum and mom is well aware of this posture and knows what's coming. All right. So what does she do? Does she want to tantrum in the middle of the kitchen while she's cooking chicken cacciatore? No, she wants him out of there. So finally she says, okay, here, take your darn cookie. And Timmy walks out. Now, here's the issue. What did Timmy learn?
Just keep asking and eventually I get what I want.
Right. Yeah. That is persistence, but not in a good way.
Okay? Right.
Mommy, the following morning is talking to the neighbor next door and she says, you know, my kid is so stubborn. I can't, you know, he takes after his Uncle Willie. No, I don't believe that's genetic. Okay. Mm-hmm. You unfortunately trained that.
Yep. Okay?
See, when my kids weren't perfect for sure, you know, although, you know, they've done very well. I'm very proud of them and they're very responsible and independent, et cetera, et cetera. And they fend for themselves all the good things that parents want and so on. And when, you know, when my kids, you know, would certainly ask for something and I'd say no, but or, I can't even know it. And then they'd ask again. That's what I did. And it sent a clear signal. We're done. I'm not buying into your game. Okay. And so forth. So they understood that, you know, I'm not going to manipulate dad by continuing to ask.
Right. And I just want to pause for just one second here because while this is in video format now, at some point it will only be audio. So I do want to tell the people who were only able to listen and not see what you just did, that when he was asked by his child, you know, I'm hungry, can I have a cookie? He turned his head the opposite direction from where his child was. And he didn't comment. He didn't make eye contact. He didn't do anything. And now you held it for several seconds. Is there a particular amount of time or was it just kind of whatever you thought was enough to get the point across or whatever you had time for?
Well, whatever it takes. You know, or I might walk out of the room. The point is I'm not going to engage. Okay. Now, I'm not going to reinforce this kind of behavior. You know, he asked a question. You know, he had every right to do that. I gave him a good answer. He didn't like the answer. Sorry, that's fine. Life. Remember, I'm teaching him about life. You don't always get what you want in life. It's partly about being responsible and also being resilient. You don't always get that, and so on.
Right.
And by nagging and so forth, you know, that's not a good skill. You know, that's not a good life skill. You understand? Being persistent, yes, in a good way, you know, by trying different things, blah, blah, blah. And believe me, if you ask my wife, what are one of my skills that or talents that she cares about is that I am very persistent. You know, if I want something or I want to do something and so forth, that's appropriate. You know, I'll find a way to do it in an appropriate way. But more often than not, that's what led me to be successful. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you want to build that skill, but certainly not in that way. By being a nag, no, that's not going to get you very far.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And so how do we help the parents who are watching right now and they have inadvertently trained their children in the manners that we're speaking of? Can they break that habit? Can they change that way of thinking in their child and in themselves?
Absolutely. I mean, one of my specialties was child psychology, but probably 90% of the time, if you looked into my office while I was doing my child psychology, who was in my office? Was it the five-year-old? Am I going to sit down with a five-year-old and say, you know, Timmy, you know, this nagging behavior is really getting old? No, I'm going to deal with the change agents, and that's mom and dad. And yes, if mom and dad really want to become better parents and raise a more responsible, resilient kid, then they're going to need to change their behavior. And yes, of course they can change. And over the years, I've done it hundreds of times.
Yeah, and I think that is something so important that everybody needs to realize. In order to change other people's behaviors, we have to look at ourselves first. Would you agree with that?
Oh, sure. Oh, particularly with kids. I mean, look, it's on us, like it or not, at least, you know, during the early phases.
Right. So if we're talking to parents, and that is a large portion of the audience that watches. And so, as I said, you know, we've now encouraged them that they will be able to change their behavior in order to change their child's behavior. What's going to happen when the child who is used to coming to them and eventually getting what they're asking for, and now suddenly mom and dad turn their head, walk away, you know, stop the conversation in whatever way they stop the conversation, what's going to happen to the child? Is the child just going to go, oh, well, okay, this is new. I guess I'm going to walk away. It's done.
Well, yes, that's a good question. And I do talk about it. I mean, the kids are going to resist at first because it's a change.
Okay? Right.
But you have to remain, you know, steadfast and continue with the program. Now, to grease the skids, if you will, is that one of the first things that I have parents do is start focusing on catching the kids when they're good.
Okay? Yes.
And to see that, and that really makes things better. So in fact, you know, kids love that. So now when the kid is playing nicely with his sister or whatever, all of a sudden you're coming over and saying, or Timmy, I really like the way you're playing so nicely with your sister. You're taking turns. You're speaking in a quiet voice. Notice, by the way, I'm identifying the behaviors that I'm rewarding. It's not saying, oh, you're being so good. What does that mean? You're identifying what you're referring to, and so on. And now, you know something, you know, for behaving, you know, for playing so nicely with your sister and letting me make my dinner, you know, after dinner, I think we're going to have a cookie for dessert.
Right.
Bam. You know, now he's getting rewarded. You know, maybe you're touching him on the back at the same time you're praising him specifically. And then now he's going to earn a cookie if he finishes his meal as a dessert and so forth. Everything's just peachy.
Yeah. And it's so, so crucial. There are so many things that you are saying right now that are included in my talks about shattering limits. And so I'm glad to hear that, you know, a top rated psychologist in Phoenix agrees with me without a degree. And that what I am saying is actually, you know, it's good stuff. I mean, I already knew it was good stuff, but to have somebody like yourself say it without, I mean, we didn't have a conversation about this beforehand. So I didn't tell you about what I do. So that's fabulous. And yeah, it's so, so incredibly important. I had a professor tell me one time that the more attention you pay to a behavior, the more of that behavior you're going to see. And so the more attention you're paying to those behaviors that you want, the more of those behaviors you're going to get and also see. And I'm glad that just there you talked about, don't just say, oh, you're being good. Because it does, it has to be very specific praise. And also I was happy that you brought it up because I was going to ask you, what is your definition of good? Because my definition, the behaviors that I might want, that I might consider good, might not be all the same ones that you would consider good.
Sure. Obviously it varies by, you know, varies by parent. Yeah. But being specific is really important. It is. Because again, why are we reinforcing what we're praising? I mean, we're praising a behavior that we'd like to see more of course. Okay. Right. Well, if we want the child to do more of it, then how are they going to repeat it if we haven't defined it? Mm-hmm. So when you define it, I like the way you sat in your chair, whatever it is you're finding appropriate, that's what you want to identify. You know, something that you can see, you know, again, it's not, you know, right. Good job, way to go. I call those compliments. Those aren't reinforcements, okay? Reinforcement changes behavior. Compliments just make you feel good for a second and then it's gone. And by the way, this even on the negative end, you know, if we're going to institute some kind of consequence or punishment, if you will, you need to be specific as well. Okay, I don't like your attitude. Okay, to a 6-year-old, what the heck is the kid supposed to do to change his or her attitude? I don't know. Right. What does an attitude look like? No, we have to be very clear about what it is we want. By the way, since we're on this topic, this not only pertains to the relationship between parent and child, how about the relationship between mom and dad, husband and wife? Okay, same darn thing. What's getting the attention? You know? Yeah. Are they coming home and you know, praising the partner? Oh, you cook chicken cacciatore, that, you know, that's my favorite. Oh, you're such a good cook, and so on. Let's catch the partner, catch them when they're good. Yeah. As simple as that sounds, I'll tell you that can carry you a very long way in your life.
Yeah. And I'm smiling because I often tell on myself when I'm doing my presentations and my seminars. And I talk about the fact that, you know, my husband and I have learned the skill with each other that, you know, if you want to see a certain behavior, then you praise that specific behavior. Like you said, I loved how you said that, actually, that it's a compliment versus a reinforcement. And that compliment of, oh, that was great. Okay, thanks. That made me feel good. But I don't know exactly what you meant when you were saying that was great. You know, was it the way I cleaned, or was it the fact that I cleaned? Was it, you know, that I prepared dinner, or that I prepared your favorite dinner? So, being very specific. Now, sometimes my husband, since he knows that I understand behaviors and that's why it used to be called Lessons for a Lifetime. And I still say this when I do it, even under the hashtag No Limits, Shattering Limiting Beliefs, is this helps you in all your relationships. It helps you with your neighbors. It helps you with your coworkers. It helps you with your spouse. It helps you with your children. Because if we know what our own expectations are and we can share those expectations so that people know where the bar is, then they're more likely to meet those expectations. But if we just get mad at them, and sometimes I find this too, and let me know if this has been your experience as well, that we don't know what our expectations are until they're not met. Would you agree with that?
Yep. You know, another application, while we're on the topic, is not another, you know, extension of what this is, what we've been talking about. And it's, like I said, it's not only between parent and child, it's between mom and dad. And how about in the workplace? How would you like to work with a boss that the only time he or she attends to you is when you've made a mistake?
Right, right.
How much loyalty are you going to have for your job? Okay, when you're called into the office, you know you're going to get criticized or yelled at or whatever. Okay, people don't like working under those conditions, and neither do kids, and so on. On the other hand, how would you like to work for a boss who, you know, who recognizes your achievements? And when he or she calls you into their office, is there to praise you and so on, and maybe even give you a raise or things of that nature. Now you've got loyalty. You're gonna kill for that boss. I mean, you're gonna work hard, stay after hours, and get the work done. On the other hand, if all the boss is doing is watching for your mistakes and you know, criticizing you and so forth, you know, what kind of loyalty are you going to have?
None. Right.
You're going to leave early, you know, just go through the motions and so on.
So you're okay. Yeah. This is where I'm going to rely on your knowledge as the definitely expert in this context. What is it about us as humans that makes us focus more often on those negatives? Why aren't we just naturally going to people and telling them? Because it does to me, it doesn't seem natural. It seems like people have to be taught praise people for specific behaviors, give them that positive feedback. If you have to go, you know, tell them, hey, you're doing a great job, but there's this one area where you're not quite meeting my expectation. But instead, we just jump to that area where the expectation isn't being met. Why do we do that?
I think because when we see things that in our mind are wrong, you know, that we have more emotion about it, and so we react to it. It takes a little training, you know, to flip the switch. But once you do, it makes a major difference.
Yeah,
it does. Yeah.
And
we can see all the applications here. I mean, as a parent, you know, as a spouse, and as maybe a boss or a worker or whatever, it's a very simple concept, but very, very powerful. And, you know, and used appropriately, I mean, that's our goal. You know, kids learn, you know, again, to be responsible and try to get recognition for, again, you know, I mean, look, you know, what do we see going on all the time? We get people looking for recognition. How? By, you know, setting off a bomb or,
right,
you know, doing, yep, crazy things. What are they doing? Well,
right,
you know, they're looking for recognition, all right, but in a terrible way.
Right.
Hopefully, again, what we want to do is raise kids that certainly seek recognition. There's nothing wrong with that, and so on, but get that recognition by being a good person, a responsible person, and so on.
Right.
And that's what's going to carry you ahead.
So you have, I mean, we've talked extensively today about basically the first book that you wrote, Who's Raising Whom? But you have multiple other books that cover, you know, lots of topics. And so I want to make sure, I appreciate you being here. And so I want to make sure, how do my audience find you? How do they purchase one of these books or learn more about you?
Well, you can check my website that you can see here at Top Phoenix Psychologist. I appreciate that. And, of course, there's ways you can contact me and contact and get, you know, get the books. Or you can go straight to Amazon as well. All the books are there as well, and so on. And I'll be happy to give you my email address. It's LFW, that's my initials for Larry Foster Waldman, at LarryWaldmanPhD.com. And certainly I'd be willing to interact with you there as well. Like you, I do a lot of professional speaking. I speak to community groups, certainly, about these topics: parenting, marriage, stress, relationships, and of course, I speak to mental health providers on practice management issues. Also, coach young therapists to help them get started in their career.
Hopefully, I don't lose our connection. I'm going to share your website. Hopefully, I don't freeze myself or you. But yeah, it's just Top Phoenix Psychologist, and you can check out more about Larry, all of the books that he has to offer. Right up here, he's got a tab for books. He's got his newest book, Silver Sex, Insights into Senior Sexuality. And he's also got the graduate course You Never Had. So tell me about that one. We've got a few minutes here. Just give me kind of a brief overview of what this one covers.
Well, what it covers is, this is for mental health providers, on how to develop a practice that's meaningful, and that and it is satisfying. I did lots of things in almost my 50 years in practice, and as I approached the twilight of my career, I realized, hey, I need to put away some money and so forth so I can retire, and I had to think of some non-traditional methods of practice, if you will. And in it, I talk about that. I did things that not too many mental health providers do, but it was rewarding. And so I'm glad I did.
Yeah, this one I think is just almost as big as, if not bigger than what we've talked about this whole episode. I see this happening way too often. And I imagine in your practice, you saw this happening way too often. So talk about the concept of love your child more than you hate your ex.
Well, as I said, in the last 15 to 20 years of my practice, I very much moved into the forensic arena. And part of that was doing family, working in the family law. So I did well over 100 child custody evaluations. I was a parenting coordinator, and so on. So I unfortunately saw people who were angry at each other and often took it out on their kids or use their kids as pawns to hurt the other parent. Right. Unfortunately, it was the kids who were suffering, and I saw a lot of those. And so that's what that book is about: is if you've chosen to separate and divorce, and in some cases, that's what needs to happen. How to manage the kids in that process so they don't feel traumatized. I saw lots of traumatized kids, and the data shows that kids who grow up in troubled marriages or divorced marriages, the rate of divorce is substantially higher than the norm. Which, by the way, the divorce rate already is close to 50%. And now with kids like that, it's even more so.
Right. One of the things that I've talked about in my sessions, in my seminars, is that behavior is personal. And I think this book, the title specifically, really speaks to that. Because when I say it's personal, I don't mean it's personal toward people receiving it. I say it's personal to the person exhibiting the behavior. And I think that happens very much so in a divorce situation with children. What do you think of that statement?
Well, I agree. Yeah, I mean, it is personal, very much so. But, you know, people are, you know, I get it, when couples decide to divorce, they're hurt. I get it. They feel some, in some instances, betrayed. And those are very strong feelings. And you feel like you want some revenge, if you will. And sometimes the thought comes, well, best way to avenge myself and so forth is to restrict the other parent from having contact with the kid. And unfortunately, while it's understandable, it's not a healthy thing. And it really puts the kids at risk.
Now, I don't remember you mentioning this one, Overcoming Your Negotiophobia.
This is a book I co-authored with a friend of mine who was also a business analyst. It's called Overcoming Your Negotiophobia, Negotiating Your Way Through Life. It's kind of an interesting book, but it talks about how basically a lot of life is negotiation. We talked about it, negotiating with your kids, negotiating with your adult children. How about that? Negotiating with your partner, with your coworkers, with your boss. And of course, how about buying? We have a section on buying a car and so on. You can get, my wife is very, very good at this. I think it helps that she's small and petite and so forth. She sometimes gets away with murder, because, smiles. Could we do that? This is my parenting book. How Come I Love Him But Can't Live With Him. Talk about some of the things we talked about here, about why couples get in trouble and what makes a marriage work and what, makes a marriage not, and so on.
What I have heard a lot through our thread today is we have to be intentional. We have to be intentional in our parenting. We have to be intentional in our spousal relationships. We have to be intentional in our employer-employee relationship. Because if we just let things go and we deal with them as they happen versus being prepared for them before they happen, we're more than likely going to find ourselves in an unhappy situation and an uncomfortable situation.
I like that a lot because you're absolutely right. Yeah. We have to be, another word, mindful of what we're doing. We're adults. We want our kids to grow up to be, successful and so forth. But again, you have to be intentional about it or mindful about it. And that's what makes a successful adult. I mean, if you're just running around doing impulsively what you feel like at the moment, typically, it doesn't end well.
Yeah. Well, we've got about 2 minutes before we need to wrap up. So I always try to give this opportunity. I feel like we've covered a lot of things, but I want to make sure that we have covered what you wanted to cover and what you hoped to cover by agreeing to be my guest today. So now is that opportunity to just say anything that you don't think you got to say or that you wanted to talk about more.
I think we've pretty well covered the waterfront here. I like what you said about being intentional. I call it mindful and so on. And the whole notion of, this change of focus. Let's focus on the positive. Let's catch, our kids, our partners, our coworkers, our bosses, whatever. While, catch them doing good and be
Thank you. And I don't know if I'm freezing. Yeah. I don't know if I was freezing there or if you were freezing, but I didn't hear it. Hopefully, whatever you had to say, the audience got to hear, and I'll just have to go watch it in the replay to catch it. But I thank you so much. This has been a very enjoyable conversation for me, and I feel like we brought a lot of good information to my audience and to everybody. It's like I said, that there was a thread of relationships throughout all of your books. And there was that thread in our conversation today. And I very much appreciate that. And I just want to remind everybody again, be sure that you are liking and subscribing to this channel, because this was episode 192. When I hit the 200th episode, which should be right around April 1st or April. I think it's April 1st. We're going to do it big. We're going to have some giveaways. We're going to have some prizes. And so you want to be sure you don't miss that episode. And the only way to not miss that episode definitely is to subscribe to this channel or like this page so that you get the notifications when these episodes are out. And again, Dr. Larry, thank you so much for being here today. I very much appreciated this. Guys, reach out. Dr. Waldman in Phoenix, he's got amazing books that can help you. He is just a plethora of information. If you need somebody to speak at an engagement, call him or call me. We both speak on behaviors and he has the PhD behind his name. I do not. So you're going to have to pay him more than you pay me, but that's okay. He's worth it. But yes, please reach out to either one of us. And if you have any comments, be sure to put them in the chat, and I will make sure, if it's something that you want directed to him specifically, that I will get that to him to make sure that he is able to answer that for you, and I will get that answer back to you. So thank you, everybody. Remember, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I will see you next time.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, SHELLEYKENOW.